Blog Talk Radio. And there you have it.
Well, that was an exciting start. It sort of felt like the time I got in my car and realized I forgot my keys, and I just sat there pressing the button and nothing happened. Well, great. Thank you for no, that's all right. You know, I see you. Don't worry about it. It's better late than not at all. So, you know, it just makes people just, you know, that more anxious to hear our voices and other assorted lies. Anyway, welcome this evening. This is the program you're turned into is Exploring a Crisis with Captain B2 and Dan Deschino. And if that's not what you're expecting, you're on the wrong train. So the music you heard, and kudos to Selena, she spotted it right away. I'm like you, Selena. I've got a real thing for soundtracks. And that actually was the Alexander Desplat sampling of the soundtrack from the film Girl with the Pearl Earring, which is a sort of a pseudo-biopic based on a novel, and I'll put that information out a little bit later. But anyway, it was a 2003 film with a 17-year-old, all of a sudden my brain has gone dead. Why can I not think of her name? I'm looking right at her, and I can't think of her name. For heaven's sake, I feel so stupid. Anyway, Colin Firth plays Johannes Vermeer, and come on, Braden, you can do this. You really can. The girl with the pearl earring. There it is. I'm gonna feel stupid the minute I look at her name. Film. Okay, film. Okay. Forget it.
Scarlett Johansson.
Thank you. My brain said I'll be checking with you later. You know, but I just kind of it stopped working. Yeah, a 17-year-old Scarlett Johansson, by the way, who I was reading. She bleached her eyebrows for the part, and there was also her co-star. Was a very young Cillian, God, what is his name? Here we go again. Cillian, he's been in spy films, but he's been around for a while too. So he plays her sweetheart, and very young versions of both of them. When you think about it, this is now 2023, so that was 20 years ago, which makes me feel decrepit. Anyway, so I thought that would be an appropriate. That was Greets theme, Greets, the name of the girl protagonist in the novel and the film, and that was under Alexander Desplat, who was just wonderful soundtrack composer. But I thought that would be a nice way to open the show, and the next time I think I'll make notes to myself so I don't have these massive stupid attacks. drugs and therapy don't seem to be helping these days. So we have based on that, we had the girl in the pearl earring, which is one of the images. And the reason I chose Vermeer is because the museum in Amsterdam is doing a once in a lifetime thing, and they have managed to gather almost all of Vermeer's works from other museums around the world, and they're in cooperation with this. They're holding this once in a lifetime one spot collection a display of Vermeer's works until June of this year, and apparently all the tickets are already sold out. So I guess if you go to Holland or go to Netherlands, you maybe can scalp a ticket outside the museum. But seriously, I mean, can you imagine? I wish That's something that just would be off the charts. So anyway, I thought rather than try and arrange a field trip to Amsterdam, which would be impossible, I thought I would bring it to you, and with as much of the artwork I guess I could pull together, and offer it to you folks for inspiration. And with that, we have a few carryovers from the previous contest. And if you would like to dive into those, we can dispatch them with all vigor and move along to Johannes.
Yes, I'd like to say hi to everybody first. I miss you, Bobby.
Why don't you?
I haven't got to say hi. I haven't got to say except for the two words, Scarlett Johansson. So I wanted to say hi to everybody besides those two words. They were very significant. Yes, but yeah, I missed you. I missed being on the show. I can't remember if I was on the last one. I can't remember what I did this morning. I don't know what's going on. I don't feel like I forgot my keys in the car. I feel like the time that I locked my keys in the car with the car running. That's what I feel like. So that's the kind of day I'm having.
No, but you were with us on the show, and we missed you the previous show. Very glad, and you sound robusto. So I'm guessing.
I am ready to rock. I took an extra nap today, so I am ready to rock. I'm not even tired.
In that case, I will slide over and let you have the steering wheel.
Excellent. Well, I just want to say hi to everybody. Ben Hart is on a bed. These are all people on the chat, by the way, which is you and I on the show so far. But we have a lot of people in the chat. We have Ben Hart who said, absolutely. He said he finally stayed up long enough to catch a show. We're glad you're here, Ben. And Selena, who said she thought I went to get a glass of wine. No, I finished about two or three while Bobby was talking about the movie, but I still have my glass of wine here. thank you, Stelina, for being on, and Naomi is on as well too, as well as Amy. So there is a party on the board tonight.
And I would remind Stelina that since she is in the background, that she can still scribble, and because the contest is still open.
You can still enter the contest, and if you get something done in the next hour, we can still play it. But you can always enter, and if you write something the next day or so, we'll read it next week anyway. We're good. Like, we're open. We'll do whatever. So
you betcha. And
we'll take care of you.
I surprised
Jenny
myself.
Jenny Hunt is on.
Last night, by writing one myself, because when I went through the images, I happened to notice something that just stimulated a thought, and I just ran with it, and I was surprised at how easy it was to get that down.
Yeah, and I knew we were looking for some, so I actually wrote one today, too. So if we have extra time, I wrote one for the show and put it on there, too. And Jenny Hunt jumped on. Jenny Hunt 2017, one of my new favorites. She's been very prolific, excuse me, in a lot of our contests. So welcome, Jenny. So it is a true party in this on the board tonight. You and I are like we're the entertainment. They're having the party, and we're like the band of the entertainment for the party today.
And I brought party poppers, and we have plenty of what do they call it? Perimeter seating, so people can sneak in the side door and get themselves comfortable and jump onto the board.
All right, so let's definitely start with our first one. Let's stop all our yapping here and get to some actual poetry. So
yes,
that's what we will do.
Into the show after having our 6-minute panic attack.
That's all good. You know what? That's the worst thing that happens to me today. I'm in good shape, I got to tell you. So,
well done, sir.
Not a big deal.
I should subscribe to that philosophy regularly.
Absolutely, 100%. You know, not a no big deal. We got people behind the scenes, and anyone who is behind the scenes, I just posted. I don't know if it's possible, but I just. Posted, I think you might have put it on earlier. I just posted, there's three SoundClouds on there. I hate to do some little some work here, but we do have three SoundClouds. They just got posted about half an hour ago, so anyone's behind the scenes, if you're able to add those. If you're not, we'll improvise, but those are there. I just want to throw that out there. But I have our first poem for the night, and this is from Carryover. And this is...
Carryover.
By D. Navarro, Frame of Mind, and you can have the honor of reading that one, Bobby, if you would like.
Already? No. And my just fell flat. I said that was my favorite poet, Carrie Over.
Carrie Over. I just posted for it. Yeah, not one by Carrie Over, but yes, by Frank, by Navarro. I posted.
Well,
yeah.
That's my father's. There it is. My father's sense of humor, because as we were being a child of the 50s, we used to take rides on the weekends, and my father would say, "Oh, we're coming to my favorite little town of Detour."
Detour. Was that
Detour.
Was that in Canada when you were going to visit your friend Alberta in Calgary?
Yeah, and it's right next to the little town of Donut Pass.
Ah, excellent. All right, the puns are flying here, so. All right, we'll get to the poetry. This one is by D.E. Navarro. If you want to give it a read, that would be great.
I shall. Frame of Mind by D.E. Navarro. Off. Can you give me a new frame of mind, brains on a flanged wooden molding carved out of walnut? Would you square me up and hang me on a wall? Picture it. Art. That's not my name, but that's my frame of mind. Leaves. In one small break of the dark and misty forest, I saw framed in leaves the rising sun standing next to the distant mountain I must cross. With a deep sigh of resolve, I took another step. Caged. The minor bird has a rough job, smelling for the lethal gases day after day, repeatedly, like some kind of parrot, when it's only a canary. Uncaged. Versify, then you go and share it. Spread your wings, you wild parrot. Let them watch and hear your art and feel the flashing colors dart when wild parrots rule the day and living poets have their say. Open cages, broken curses release pages of open verses. And all is better day and night when parrots fly and poets write. End poem.
Excellent. Thank you, Captain. And if anyone's looking at the poem, it was written for one of this last artist from last time. It's really interesting works because he's done a few, at least that we had on the contest, where the frame was part of the artwork. It's almost like 3D. It was really, really beautifully done for that. And this is a great poem. Very, very interesting, kind of from the mind of the bird, which I really thought was great. And I like the different sets that he's talking about here. So off, leaves, caged, uncaged, I thought was very, very interesting. Can you give me a new frame of mind, brains on a flanged wooden molding carved out of walnut? So just thinking of the this is almost like a new tree that he's kind of hanging out on, and the leaves. But it was interesting to focus on the leaves on the frame as well, too, which is something that I don't think we saw last time. In one small break of the dark, misty forest, I saw framed in leaves the rising sun standing next to the distant mountain I must cross. And then for Cage, the minor bird has a rough job smelling for lethal gases day after day, repeatedly, like some kind of parrot when it's only a canary. That's a really interesting take on the canary in a coal mine, right? Famous, but a pretty cool police song, Canary in a Coal Mine, for those who don't know. But the Canary in the Coal Mine, where I think this is true, right, Bobby? People used to actually bring canaries in coal mines to check. Okay,
yeah.
So they bring them down there, and if the canary died, okay, there's poisonous gases, we have to leave, because the canaries are weaker than people. So bird has the rough job of smelling for the gases. And comparing that to kind of being trapped in this cage on this picture, I thought was also very interesting. So this whole thing was beautiful and just very thought provoking. His author notes say multifarious thoughts about being unframed, caged, and free to write poetry. And that's very interesting, the way he kind of superimposed all of those ideas together. So this is very, very beautiful and thought-provoking. I was extremely impressed with this when I had read it before, as I am always with Mr. Navarro's work. So fantastic. Let's get some thoughts on you, Bobby.
I like the way he segmented it. I especially like the last stanza. He's got different thoughts of referring to different artwork, and the last stanza he breaks loose from free verse and launches into rhyme and does it so smoothly that you hardly realize that you just sailed right through a rhyming verse, and it's really quite melodic. I like that. When wild parrots rule the day and living poets have their say, open cages of broken curses, release pages of open verses, and all is better day and night when parrots fly and poets write. It's lovely, and it really is, and I really like his interpretation of the font. And it's interesting because he has combined, like you said, an image of a parrot, but also the artwork image was a canary sitting outside the cage being the image in the frame, and the canary being part of the frame and being outside the cage. So interesting interpretation. A lot going on in that piece. A lot going on.
Yeah, I also really liked how he ended it with rhymes. So there was basically some free verse in the top, and then he ended it with rhyme, and each section kind of had its own feel to it. I've done that multiple times on my poems, where a lot of times I'll end with rhyme just to kind of wrap it up. But I like the uncaged part is rhyme, so it's almost like a song, right? Like it's musical, so they're happy, they're rhyming, and everything's happier again for the uncaged part. I thought that was very, very clever for him to be able to do that.
I agree. Yeah.
And Ben said, beautiful read, and what a lovely and smart poem. Thank you, Ben. I agree with you. All right. Let us move on a little bit here. Now, I'm going to take a chance. We're going to have a quick moment of silence to see what happens, because I'm not sure, because I put this SoundCloud up very late. So we will have a – how about for – oh, shoot, I forgot his name. Who's the – anybody know who the saxophone player played with Miles Davis just passed away? Very famous jazz saxophone player that just passed away. That let's see, we can have a moment of silence for him while we're waiting. Anyway, I can't remember. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask if we can play the SoundCloud for Pam Ray that I'm going to put up on the board. And I don't know if it made it up. If we can't, I'll read it. But let's see. Who's the? Anybody knows who the saxophone player, by the way, I'm talking about? Please put that up there. Boy, you and I are both having some brain problems today with remembering things.
Well, yeah. Well, I just dropped off and came back on again. You know, you're going to think it's interesting. Yeah,
Wayne Shorter, that's it.
Yeah. Well, the Gremlins were. Yeah. So, you know, whatever. You know, as long as this too shall pass. So.
All right. So Wayne Shorter is the gentleman who just passed. Who, if you don't know who Wayne Shorter is, he's an amazing.
No.
Horn player, and he just passed away. So he was a jazz guy, played with others, Jenny Hunt. Rip to him and jazz record. Yep, Jeff Beck that died. Yep, Wayne Shorter, though, I saw him with the Carlos Santana All-Star Band a while back. It was the only time I saw him, but he's amazing. He was back with Miles Davis and all these guys. But we don't have to have the moment of silence while I wait for the SoundCloud, because we have the SoundCloud, so... Rest in peace, Wayne Shorter, and we will
blood
wait for the SoundCloud for Pam.
Blood red blooms growing from topsy-turvy raindrops dropped and forgotten, meandering muses finding the time to touch the sky with wayward glances, unwinding the wounds of memory's formation, letting grow the mind's eye to the beauty of awareness in a bouquet heart offered in the sacredness of trust earned, hands delving deep in thorns and mud to grasp love and heal together. End poem.
Thank you very much, Ray, for playing the SoundCloud, for saving us with adding the SoundCloud, and Pam, obviously, for a beautiful read. And so this is interesting. This is a lot of the theme of the artist's work, where it's all black and white that he does. It's very, very, you know, realistic drawings, black and white, but then there's color, and usually red, that is part of it. So in this picture, there's an umbrella with some red flowers growing out of the umbrella. As usual, Pam has some great imagery here. So blood red blooms growing from topsy-turvy raindrops, dropped and forgotten, unwinding the wounds of memory's formation. I thought that's really, really interesting how it's almost like the umbrella has died and there are these flowers kind of coming out of it, and what has happened in the past that has come out. You know, we do think of, you know, flowers are always interesting to me because, or just even the growth, because it is renewal, it's bloom, right? We think of the springtime and everything's fresh, but it also can come out of devastation, right? You know, you go to an abandoned town, abandoned city, or even like my house, you know, my house is a little older and I'm trying to fix it up, and there's some problems with like some of my walls, my front wall, because it was let go and growth has come out of it. So it's like destroying it. So it's also, you know, the aftermath sometimes of whatever has happened before. So that was really interesting here. And in the very, very end, hands delving deep in thorns and mud to grasp love and heal together. So almost like whatever had happened with this, you know, with the umbrella that's turned upside down, but now it's kind of healing and refreshing and new. So really great, I think, imagery in the poem that's coming from the imagery in the art, which is all about ekphrasis. That's what this show is actually all about. So beautiful, Pam, as always. She's an amazing poet. And, yeah, that's all I wanted to say. So, Bobby, what do you think? Uh-oh, Bobby is mutating. Hopefully not
I am.
Too much.
That's her snoring. I like her. I like her alliteration. Meandering muses find the time to touch the sky with wayward glances, unwinding the wounds of memory's formation. I really was struck by her interpretation of this. Rather, you look at this picture, and it's the direction she took it in was quite emotional, quite cerebral, and quite philosophical. Hands delving deep in thorns and mud to grasp love and heal together. So she saw in this upturned umbrella with flowers sprouting from the handle. She saw redemption in these blood red blooms growing from topsy turvy raindrops, which I thought was really quite inspired. I mean, she's got her way of looking at things that sometimes when she takes a departure, it is so stunning that you just it gives you pause. And this is one of those pieces that I think she did a marvelous job with. So I'm glad, really glad she submitted this to the contest.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And lots of comments. Ben said, emotional, powerful piece. Delina, lovely read and lovely piece to the prop. Imagery is beautiful. She loves the lines, expertly conceived. And Naomi, amazing. Pam, so great comments. Thank you, guys. All right. And Amy, too. Amy really liked the topsy-turvy raindrops and letting grow in the mind's eye. But those are great lines. Thank you, Amy. All right, what we are going to do next now, we're going to move on here. And Ben is on the board, and we have Ben's from last contest.
Okay.
And this is a good epic one. Thank you, Ben, as always. Ben gets into his writing and is not, I don't know if you guys know, Ben is not only an amazing poet, but also an amazing artist himself. So we appreciate the write, Ben, and I'll give this a read. This is called Little Infinities. Paper Girls in Fields of Rain, Part 1. Remember me, it read in big red letters, graffiti sutures that couldn't stop the bleeding. But to the passerby, who doesn't have the time for reading, it's better to forget them, saying, people die and we must let them. One less lullaby for tired throats to butcher, the memory of someone they were only passing by. But my caustic lips will never stop delivering razor blade serenades to the dear ghosts drifting round my peripheries. Paper girls so fast asleep at their spray paint altars, while umbrella boutiques lay in fields of rain, happily abandoned for the tender promises February couldn't keep. I would live 500 times just so I could provide 1,000 upheld hands for them to rest in Earth's embrace with temperate river Thames. Touch, part two. Fingerprints were made to look like labyrinths because identity is supposed to take a lifetime to figure out. Whilst chasing round many false turns that lied about dead ends, bruises were made to remind our skin of every buried aching, smuggling sanguine fireworks high into the skies of hope, screaming, hoist the colors! Trauma's subdermal Trojan horse going to war upon every waking. Music Box Dancer, part three. When man had just invented anger and they needed her more than ever, Music Box Dancer had just moved away from Manchester, back to lands that still remember Fenno-Scandia's invasion, when all of Britannia burned and Eden's beloved black savage, the forbidden first of a loving God's creations. Back to the lands no Northman would ever understand, thinking it must be tamed, something free. It almost made her sad that they would never see a pinene chain like hibiscus rain over pearly gates, where Rumball's little white lighthouse, built from a small skirt full of stones, guides the cow and calf safely home down empty roads. And though over the gritstone moors of Boland's York, Lancaster bombs may have long replaced the storks, Herculean angels circling limestone plateaus, and to the music of four Rolls-Royce Merlins, she gladly dances the chastised stage left in the shadows of heroes that wouldn't bow before Aryan eagles and their Stuka screams. Blue Sunday, part four. How did our hearts know not to beat upside down before we ever touched the ground, before mosaic roots ever manifested kaleidoscope canopies to portray Earth's bewildered love with a saturnine interstellar and the canary stars in their cages who get to sing forever. But to the heavens fair, Earth's ancient woodlands may as well have been a gas station bouquet, something meant to last that wouldn't survive the day, exchanging change to divide the weight of existence on our shoulders and the blood that clots to boulders and midnight veins. Decay will come in stages, and dreams will die in shame. But I must admit I live in fear of you figuring it out one blue Sunday when we're throwing dishes through the kitchen, that my dear, I am atrophy and not some happy appellation, and that you were only ever something meant to kill me, and I knew you wouldn't like the irony of bleeding being pain's reprieve, but at this point, I would take anything to ease my chlorine breathing. Pan Am, Part 5. Once upon a time, there were more than just lovers in a landfill. We brought back the beginning, the salt pan mirrors of infinity, staggering breaths when we couldn't tell if absent tears turned tumors would ever rupture into healing. Infinity's happiest end may only be found in Venus Alley, but Sister of Sol know it means nothing if it's not you that I'm feeling with. And my dear, it is okay if you feel the need to scream, even fuck you in the book at me. I'm still here now, between lost and found, fast asleep. Or so says Johnny. I'm not sure, though, that is indeed not my final dream. I just wanted to be there upon life leaving me. Let a bullet's final prayer ring out in my dafty temple. Though I should have told you not to worry, that I was not in a hurry because I was dying anyway. But when another morning ever came, I made sure upon my last desperate draw, I battled the closing of my eyes just to have one more look at my desert dame. You are my anti-retrograde. And I hope, fondly, you will remember your crazy V. You were the happiest end to my infinity. End poem. And this was, epic poem by Ben. I made it all the way through. Ooh, I got to go get a drink of water after that. But he did it to multiple. So he did, there's five parts here, and there's multiple paintings that he did, which is really great when people are able to tie it all together. So fantastic event. And I definitely need a little bit of a break, so you get to comment first. Bobby, go for it.
The first thing that comes to mind, I feel like you just read the lyrics to Bye Bye Miss American Pie.
There you go.
Because it has that same level of complexity and reference to obscure references. Because about halfway through, I'm thinking, I'm listening to Bye Bye Miss American Pie without the music. Because I'm sure as you look through this, especially what really struck me was the World War II references in part three, the Music Box Dancer. When Music Box Dancer had just moved away from Manchester back to lands that still remember Fenoscandia's invasion, when all of Britannia burned, but Eden's love, black savage, forbidden first of God's creations. And then it talks about Lancaster bombers, which, unless you're a student of history, is totally an obscure reference, or you're a Brit. But I'm not a Brit, but I am a student of history. Lancaster bombers, Boland's York, Herculean angels, and the Rolls-Royce Merlins. I mean, the Rolls-Royce angels or the Rolls-Royce engines in the planes, and the Aryan eagles and the Stuka screams. I mean, there's some great World War II references in there, and the air battles over the UK, and I really really enjoyed the third part of that. It really captured my attention with the references to the aircraft, and I thought that was really artfully done. But then you go into the fourth part of the Blue Sunday, and you go into the gas station bouquet and woodlands and exchanging chains to divide the weight of existence in our shoulders. This has got some great metaphor in it, and I mean this is one of those reads that actually you'd want to sit down with the author and talk to them about this. It says that I am atrophy and not some happy Appalachian. And you know, there's things in here that I'm sure once discussed would reveal some really deep meaning. It is a beautiful, epic piece of poetry. It is one of those reads that you cannot digest in one sitting. That would be like trying to wolf down a gourmet meal in one gulp. You can't do it. This is one of those reads that requires some study. And actually, this reminds me of the type of pieces that my freshman English teacher would trot out and involve the entire class in discussing, because you really get some revealing thoughts from discussing pieces like this and how people interpret them. But I would still love to talk to the author about this and just get just to be able to discuss some of the references, because I really enjoyed it.
Well, he's on the board. Make a date with him. He's right there. Maybe you guys can have tea sometime. But it was fantastic, and we get some good comments from Naomi and Stelina on compliments for Ben as well too. It was great. I mean, this is definitely something that you can study for a while. I mean, it was beautiful to read. I enjoyed it the whole way through, and it's one of those ones that was hard to read, not because it was hard to read, because I'm thinking about it. So I'm stopping. Wait a second, I'm reading this. I have to keep going. I can't stop. And I wanted to stop and talk about it like five times while I was here. But the things that struck me, and this might not even have anything to do with the poem, but you know, that's one of the things about poetry and art is, right, it can hit you all different ways, is the beginning and the end.
Yeah.
The beginning, to me, I really like the people die and we must let them. One less lullaby for tired throats to butcher in the memory of someone they were only passing by. But my caustic lips will never stop delivering razor-blade serenades. it's, you know, I'm older, right, in my 50s, and I've unfortunately been through, you know, had a lot of, you know, funerals and so forth that went through, and it's always been interesting to me the way different people kind of handle different things, right? Now, obviously, it depends on it, right? If somebody tragically loses a child or somebody that's tragic, it can certainly be a much more traumatic event, you know, as if somebody was sick for a long time and you kind of get time to, you know, process it. But it is interesting, even culturally-wise, how different people handle the death of someone else. You know, I've been to funerals before where people are gathering together and just talking, and it's not as much a sad, you know, hanging around and being very sad. It's more like everybody
right.
getting together and just you know, meeting, you know, around the
yeah.
person, and it's
yeah.
more of an acceptance. But then where he's talking about how, you know, one less lullaby to tired throats, but my caustic lips will never stop delivering razor blade serenades. So you're still inside, you know, you might still be really hurting. And then the ending to me kind of ties that in. I made sure upon my last desperate draw, the battle of the closing of my eyes to have just one more look at my desert dame. You are my anti-retrograde, and I hope you'll finally remember me. So, you know, that's still always there. You know, when my parents passed away in 2016, it was hard. But I just think about them all the time. You know, I was strong during it. I was talking to everybody, but it's hard. You know, I always bring up my favorite band, Rush, and the drummer unfortunately passed away from brain cancer. And I saw this story about how the other two were prepared. They knew about it for 3 years that he was really sick. And they said, I was just listening to an interview. They said they thought they were prepared. And when they went there, they really weren't, you know, and everybody kind of handles it differently. But I like how that's what I got out of those two sections was that kind of grasping and the different way, but then people are always in your memory and you always still are thinking and hoping and sending thoughts towards even the people that are gone. But, I mean, so much else to talk about, but great poem, Ben. Awesome, awesome, awesome.
Yep. And we got a motor on because we're a little behind the curve here. With our technical difficulties
having
to catch up.
Yes.
Yeah.
You and I both have a problem with talking, so we'll slow down.
I have no problem. I do it fine.
Hey, you know, we'll give everybody their due. We'll give everyone their due here. So these are very interesting poems we got going on here today. So yes,
seriously.
let's mosey on here, and you get to do the next one. So this would be Woo-hoo! I'm gonna post it. Don't be excited. I haven't posted it yet. Everybody calm down. Everybody relax. It's posting now.
Piano, piano.
All right, there we go. This is by Lockdown Lux. So if you can give that a read, that would be great.
Interesting nom de plume. A Green Eternity. Sent by Emperor on his life's quest, so travels a young samurai. Suddenly lost in a raging tempest, a humble cottage catches his eye. A welcoming host within this place is father, mother, and their daughter, she of great beauty and grace, as a green willow beside water. Exchanging poetry, the two see their kindred spirit is one to share, both seeing the same destiny, a vow to each other they swear. Happy years pass. Then one day she gasps in pain, falling into his arms. Her being is linked to a willow's sway. Someone is cutting down its charms. She is gone. Her robe falls to the ground. The samurai rails at this cruel blow. So he visits where she was first found. No cottage, just stumps of green willow. Then he sees one green shoot. He stays to tend it and sing. Before long, his endeavors bear fruit. It grows into a fine sapling. His vigil maintained until he dies, leaves rust music as they know. The sapling sends seed where he lies, rooted forever with his green willow. End of poem.
Very emotional right there. That was beautiful. Nice job,
yeah,
Locked On Larks. We appreciate it. And I was going to try to promote people today. Lockdown Rux has a book out. Go on his profile page, and you'll see it there. So we always want to promote people with books out there. Anyway, this is very beautiful, and I do like that. And you know, again, we seem to be, you know, don't want to bring it down on a Saturday night, but you know, we're talking about death a little bit. And it is interesting how, you know, in at least the United States, you know, where the grave sites are, there was a lot of flowers, and you bring flowers and you plant them there. And that's just that idea of everlasting life and renewal. And, you know, from death comes life. Mm-hmm. And I really like how the green eternity, they put themselves into, they will still live on in these plants that they're talking about. And in the renewal of life.
Author's note that from illustrations of 14 and 29 and the mythology of the Tomotada, which I thought was interesting, and interesting in that it bears a resemblance to the Greek mythology of Bacchus and Philemon, who were an elderly couple who were visited by Zeus and Hermes in disguise, and they visited the village below where the people lived, and they were turned aside. But this poor elderly couple welcomed them into their poor humble home, and fed them and entertained them. And when the couple realized that they were entertaining to the gods, they became very fearful. But Zeus says, "No, you know, we're going to destroy the village below because of their cruelty." And they said, no, please don't do that. So they turned it into a lake and turned all the people into fish. And then they said, they asked the couple, they said, "What would you like? We would give you anything you want." And the couple said, and they were very old, and they said, "We've been together all our lives. We would just like, when the end is near, we would like to end together." And so when... So they turned their hovel into a temple, actually, and they lived together for the rest of their lives. And then, as they started getting older, they started stiffening, and actually became rooted to the ground. And one was a laurel, and the other was, I believe, an oak. And they twined together at the end of their lives. And so there's a lot of mythology that goes along with that everlasting, you know, after. The afterlife in nature, in existing again in nature, or continuing on in nature. So I thought it was a nice turn on the mythology, and did a beautiful job.
Absolutely.
With the
rhyme. Yeah, absolutely. And Ben is going to bed because he said dawn is coming up soon, so he wants to get to bed before it's actually daytime. So thanks, Ben, for staying with us. At almost 5 a.m. where he is, so we appreciate that.
Oh,
yeah, so let's move on here. I'm going to post one by Cassia, and I will give that a quick read.
All right.
By Cassia F. And this is called The Road. Fingerprint roads to my life's destinies. The curves, paths unknown, black and white, light and dark. Twirl of the universal ways, the good and the bad, linked together, a chain. Mystical to know, blueprint no one can own. Finding empowerment of your own. Dreamer I will always be, seeing beauty in the most unlikely places. Imagining love, the only droplets of filled ocean. Sky, the road to all the questions, with every beat of thy heart. Everything comes alive, shedding of the sands. Touch, I draw future to be through my eyes. End poem. What do you say, Bobby?
I said it's lovely. I was going to almost call this a brevity, she says she was inspired by prompts 6 and 15, and I believe one of them is the fingerprint like labyrinth. And I like the way she's interpreted. This, the twirl of the universal ways, the good and the bad, linked together, a chain, mystical to know, blueprint no one can own, finding empowerment of your own. I really enjoy that passage there. It's very positive and very, very deeply philosophical piece we have here.
Yes, yes, we do. Yes, we do. I always like Cassia's poems. And, you know, the famous poem the world less traveled, right, that everybody knows, poets know. I've always struggled. That's one idea I've always struggled with writing with is, as I've written, and I've always tried to write about the experience of writing that world less traveled. Every time I write it, I'm like, well, I'm kind of saying the same thing as that. So what I thought was interesting about this is I think she did find a new way to talk about that road that you travel that is, it just brings you into a little bit of a mystical state. Dreamer, I will always be, seeing beauty in the most unlikely places, imagining love, the only droplets of filled ocean. So I thought she did a really nice job with just kind of bringing all that together and talking about that that kind of unique perspective of these paths that we all walk and how we kind of see things and experience and see the beauty when we are taking walks wherever we are. So really interesting and beautiful, Cassia. Thank you. And our last one from, so we'll, hopefully we'll get a good hour in of this week. So our last one from the last contest is by Teresa S. And Bobby, it is your turn.
Is it, Mike? Already? Okay.
It is. And it is up now.
There it is, okay. Okay, we have To the Hummingbird, Part 3. Makes you wonder where Parts 1 and 2 are. You may be wondering, my love, where your sweet hummingbird has flown. For today my cage is empty, no sweet voiced song. Reaches deep into your core, though you saw me in deep disguise as I flew above you toward the clouds. You saw me shiver as I look it back, as I look it back and caught your eye, yes. You may be wondering, my love. So have I go now, so have I fly, to find the golden waterfall of dreams. For you made your twins just fly away, for you had caged your hummingbird, you see. Your hummingbird was singing wings. But my wings sing out so loud and clear, no being should ever be encaged. By family, by love, by war, by friends, for a hummingbird needs to always be free. A hummingbird needs to always fly free. End poem.
Awesome read as always, Bobby. And yeah, this is really interesting. I'll definitely have to go back and read to Part 1 and 2 if those are there. And It's a beautiful way of saying that, you know, metaphor that we've all either read about or written about as far as just being able to be a free person and thinking ourselves as you know, as a bird is flying away, right? We always think of that as freedom because you can go three-dimensional, right? You can kind of go wherever you want. So off I go now. So off I fly to find the golden waterfall of dreams. You made your twin just fly away, for you had caged your hummingbird. You see, your hummingbird was singing wings, but now it's leaving, for a hummingbird needs to always be free. So very, very interesting, and it is a personal right. So I would like to know the backstory, I think, would be interesting about exactly what she's talking about of getting free from. Certainly different ideas come to my head, but awesome, Teresa. Very, very beautiful, very well composed. Nice job. Bobby, to you, what are your thoughts?
It is. It does strike me as a personal right, and I think this is a thought that's never struck me before. But to think of a hummingbird in a cage is anathema. I mean, it would be like. The image we saw, I think it's one of the other images, is the unicorn with a bit and a halter on. And the unicorn being a symbol, a mythological symbol of freedom. You will never see, and I'm an audience, you'll never see a unicorn as a carousel figure because of its traditional freedom to be like yoking it. And I think I never thought of the hummingbird in quite the same thought it being a symbol of freedom. But when you stop and think about it, can you even envision a hummingbird in a cage? I don't think I can, because it is so by its nature so free. To look at it, to watch it, to see it in its environment, and I think she's really made a striking point of to bind her to certain rules or lifestyle would be like trying to cage a hummingbird.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That is an interesting thought. I actually haven't thought about that either. And I do remember you saying that the last show about the unicorn. In fact, I actually looked around to try to find a unicorn in the carousel, and I could not find one. So you are correct.
Right.
I have not seen that.
You won't. By
yes,
tradition,
I do. That stuck in my head from the last show. All right, cool.
Actually,
so now we are
knew
on to the
was restoring
ahead,
the unicorn. He was the one that told me that. He was a carousel historian and was in the process of restoring an antique carousel. And he was one that told me that. It always stuck with me.
Cool. Yeah, no, it's an interesting fact. All right, so we are on to the new contest, and we are going to get to Jenny and Amy who else we got here? We got and Naomi. We're going to get to all you guys that are on the board first, since we're running a little late. But if you want to give a little overview of this contest, Bobby, that would be great.
Well, like I said earlier on, the museum in and I included, I believe, quite a bit of information. If you notice, and I'll just call this up very quickly, in our contests at the end of the biography that I try and give on the artists, I will also list resources. So if anyone has the desire to seek out more information on that particular artist, I give them the opportunity, because that's, and it's also from whence I draw my information. And the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam. The website of the museum itself, they have a retrospective on there, also some information from Wikipedia. And I also listed something that's one of my favorites. There is a documentary out there called Tim's Vermeer. And the first time I encountered this, I was absolutely fascinated by it. I recommend it highly to anyone who is a polymath or who is interested in polymaths or is interested in Vermeer, because this gentleman, Tim, I can't remember his last name, he's a polymath, not college educated, just naturally brilliant. And he had his own business, somehow got into studying Vermeer and heard that Vermeer, one of the things, because Vermeer's paintings had such exquisite detail that there are several art scholars out there that have been investigating, did Vermeer use camera obscura, and did that assist him? Well, this gentleman, Tim, he decided to pursue this, and he pursued it in such laborious detail that he recreated furniture pieces because they couldn't get what he wanted. He made the furniture because it was a different scale from those times. He glazed glass so that it was glazed the same way as the window that it shows in the paintings. I mean, just the insane detail. But what he went through, and he taught himself to paint from camera obscura, and to the point where he actually reproduced a Vermeer. And the detail, the level of detail, and how he just went about this, I found absolutely fascinating. So I included the information on Tim's Vermeer for anyone who really wants to look at that. I recommend it highly because it points things out about Vermeer's work and it also interviews two very prominent art historians that are Vermeer experts, and you'll notice that in reading about Vermeer, there's very little information on him, and he only did about 48 pieces, but there's historically, there's about as much information on him as there is on Shakespeare, which is like almost nothing, but his works endure, and these art historians have done their level best to try and gather what they can about it. So I provided that as background. And in the meantime, just to look at the works, and I provided as many as I could with the titles. And like I said, if you look at them, the attention to detail in some of these is just insane. It's like a photograph. So with that, I thought this would be a fun thing for our poets to tackle. And you know, it's there we are. So it's Breeden's Passion.
Yeah, and we'll get cranking here. And I just want to apologize ahead of time. It's hard to explain technically, but I had to. I'm talking through my phone, but I have headset on. I had to put my phone in the other room to charge it, so that's where my mute button is. So I don't have a mute button for a little while. I'm going to try really hard not to make lots of noise, but if I do,
it's that whole electron thing, isn't it?
I don't know. Yeah, it's just my life is crazy like that. And I was going to do it in a different order, but Stelina actually put one in last minute, and I just
Bored.
I wasn't going to do that one right away, but hey, Stelina, let's do it. So everybody that's on the board, we're going to try to get to, and Stelina, I put on here, so I will give this a read, and then we'll move on. So we'll try to get to at least the four people that are on the board have put poems on. So this one is by Stelina called Voyeurs, and it is to the prompt that if you look at the poem, it's her prompt is in the pictures on there. We are voyeurs in her reverie of remembrance, reflected regrets in the window panes. Her heart pours teardrops upon well-thumbed parchment. Her loss is far greater than her gains. She steals these moments from mundane chores to grieve for all which filled her soul with bliss and gave her days an essence of eager expectancy, of that sweet surrender of her lover's kiss. Now time hangs heavily as each moment yearns for the close of day when she can dream in realms of wondrous whatevers and maybes of beautiful beliefs of what might have been. End poem. Excellent, right. Amazing, Stelina, that you could write that and still participate, and that's so beautiful to write that quickly, and I love it. And I always enjoy when we when the poets get into the artists, the subject's mind, so they really get into that character and just create basically a real character out of this one painting. And I thought this is beautiful. We are voyeurs in the reverie of remembrance, reflected regrets in the window panes. That is really amazing. What a beautiful, beautiful line to start off with. But again, just love how you got into the actual mind of this woman, and I thought you did a fantastic job, a great, great job. And Bobby, go for it. Your turn.
I'm glad to see that someone made mention of the windows, and that is one of the details that is almost so subtle in his work that it escapes detection. Yet it was the light is so important. We reflected regrets in the window panes. Wonderfully said. The moments she steals these moments from mundane shores to grieve for all which filled her soul with bliss and gave her days an essence of eager expectance. Now the sweet surrender her lips. Yes, I really can empathize with this piece. It's strange how you have presented this how you've presented this this brevity, that it really speaks deeply to me about a conversation I was having with my therapist, believe it or not, about how all of a sudden, for some strange reason, I've been divorced for 30 years now, and all of a sudden I'm angry at this man. Because when I married him, I thought this was going to be a forever thing, that I would grow old with someone, that I would, it filled my soul with bliss and gave my days an essence of eager expectancy. And now I'm in the wonders, whatevers, and maybes of beautiful beliefs of what might have been. And it's strange that you put it that way. Your timing is exquisite, as is your verse. I'm definitely going to save this one because it has spoken straight to my heart.
Isn't that the same, though, with every relationship, Bobby? My wife's still mad at me for things I did 35 years ago. Isn't that just called like being in a relationship?
No. Listen, like, this is a man who I married when I was 22. We did everything together. We were best friends. Did everything: shopping, cooking, went to bed at the same time. We're never without each other. And 15 years later, all of a sudden, he takes a business trip and he meets someone, some character, in a bar in New Orleans, and comes back home and decides he's not in love with his wife anymore. After trying to logic through, I discovered some interesting things. You can't logic someone out of that, and you can't make someone want to change. And relationships, here's interesting, people don't realize relationships do not have rights. They have privileges. And if someone decides to take those privileges away, there's naught you can do. And so that's where I found myself. And that was where I was. I was in a relationship that I was just totally, completely happy in. And then all of a sudden it ended abruptly. I had no one I could talk to about it because it was my best friend that had ended it. And there I was. And so I stopped it. And I after trying to keep it together for 24 months, realized that there, at that point it was formed without function. It was formed without substance, I should say. And I ended it and took the power away from him and brought it back to myself. But I think now in the past of what everything we did together and how much joy I had with being with him when the relationship was good, and it makes me angry that he robbed me of that. And I just find myself now having to deal with 30-year-old anger. But it's weird because it's like all of a sudden it's come upon me. And reading the last stanza, I'm reminded of it. That's just exactly what I'm thinking. The might have been.
I get you, Bo. Yeah, I'm so sorry. That happened. But you're strong. You bounce back, right? And you get on with life as best you can.
You don't realize how long have you been married?
Been with my wife since 1988.
Okay, you've got a shared history with one person. Basically, you know what you do? You validate each other. You've got a shared history. You have got so much communication between you that you almost don't even have to speak. And when you are the reason for each other and you validate each other, and I don't have that validation. And I feel cheated. And enough of that. Let's go back to the poetry.
I got you. No, it's a tough thing. We can certainly talk about this all night. Relationships, all that stuff it's very very complicated. So I totally get that.
But that's where I found myself in reading Selena's her brevity. That's where it struck me, right in my heart.
I'm going to get you to some happier things here because I have good news for you.
Yeah, please do.
I do. I have really good news. I am naming the official reader of Amy's poems.
Who?
So I saved this one for you. And Amy, you have one from A.R. Mundell from Amy is on the board. You're her official reader, I've decided. You read it every time it comes up. So
thank you.
I'll let you read this
thank
one.
You.
That makes
most
you happy, I know.
I kicked
so.
Your ass if you didn't let me, you know.
That's right.
Why do you look so bad? Well, Bobby kicked my ass again.
That's right.
Okay, Oval Tender World, enough of that nonsense, by Amy Mundell. She looks out through tinted glass, shapes cut in such a way, tiny circles, sweeping lines, dissecting clouds between their frames, a world view set artist's hands to shape the world she sees. Her daylight sieved through confines she neither wants nor needs. Obstructed view, obstructed land, the map teased at her back. Its presence breeds such whispers of things she'll never have. Freedom bleeding, restless lines to crawl into her form, yet sprawling realms are drawn too tight by weighted rod of corset cords. All her oceans, every drop confined within a jug, forced to pander, forced to smile for scraps of wanderlust. Tittering at tidbits till he spills his ocean floors, scenery growing broader than that room of sill and door. All those sights upon his tongue flickered out into the air, dripping from his being, haunted eyes to well-kept hair. She tries to catch some in her jug for those days left to herself, pressing pewter to her ear to hear seas within her shell. But when the world cries ocean tides over ovals down her spine, she dreams it sweeps her out past the breakers, past her mind. Walk those faded lines without strings or glass or him to gather her own oceans and have the chance to sink or swim. End poem.
Excellent read, as always, Bobby. And interesting, and another person who wrote multiple prompts, which is always great. And, you know, as her author's notes say, there's a lot of history, but also feminism and women, you know, just women's studies in this as well, too. And I really like the title, Oval Tinted World. And when you think of oval, you almost think of like somebody squinting, and there's multiple things with that, either trying to get more light in or also something that is a little maybe obscured. And I do see on here where she says, obscured view, obstructed land, excuse me, the map teased at her back, its presence breathes such whispers of things she'll never have. Freedom bleeding, restless lines. I'm going to keep reading the whole thing because it just all connects so well. Freedom bleeding, restless lines to crawl into her form, yet sprawling realms are drawn too tight by weight rod of corset cords. Yeah, that's just a great line, you know. And obviously, I can't think from a woman's standpoint, but you know, there's been so much oppression in the world and so much, you know, just throughout the world, and there still is, right? I think and hope things are getting better. You know, I was watching some interviews with men back in the 50s or 40s, and it was just an interview. They were interviewing men on the street, and they were saying, should you – and I just can't believe this happened. You know, my parents were around the 40s and 50s, right? They were married, and they weren't like this, but – they asked the person, should you spank your wife, which I can't even believe is a thing. And they're like, yes, if she, just to make sure she knows who's like the head of the household. And I'm like, that was actually like a thing back then. Just like, you know, when the Black Lives Matter movement came out, I was working with this guy at work. He was a janitor, he was a black guy. And I asked him, he's an older gentleman. And I said, hey, Benny, I said, you were around in the 60s, right? When, you know, In the 60s and 50s, like, you know, how does the racism, you know, what's going on today? He's like, yeah, it's not even a conversation. Like, it was so much worse back then. It's certainly issues now, but, you know, this is back when there were different bathrooms and all these things, right? So there was just, it wasn't too long ago when there was real oppression. You know, we certainly deal with it again today, but it wasn't too long ago when there was real oppression in this country and all over the world. And it, like I said, it's still there, but hopefully things are getting better and equality is getting there, just not fast enough. So beautiful poem on all of that, and really important and interesting lines. So great job, Amy. And Bobby, go for it.
I think this is an exquisite write. There's a deep philosophical thread through it of suppressed feminism that you caught, and my compliments to you on that. A worldview set by artist's hands to shape the world she sees, but obstructed view, obstructed land, the map at her back, things she'll never have, freedom bleeding, restless lines, and I'm in weighted rod of corset cords, all her oceans, every drop confined within a jug. That is so, that particular phrase is just so profound. It speaks volumes to how all the possibilities that this character has are forced to pander, forced to spout, for scraps of wanderlust. The confines, and if you look like in the early 1900s when women were campaigning and for the vote, and how women were considered chattel, they were considered possessions, and if she had any kind of aspirations at all, she had to confine them within a jug. And the women who broke out of that were strong women. Some of them, unfortunately, paid the price. The women that in D.C. That were suffragettes, many of them chaining themselves to the gate, front gate at the White House, were incarcerated. In a building right about 2 miles from my house here, in Loudoun County, Lorton Correctional Facility was where they put the suffragettes. They force fed. Some of them almost died. Jane Byrne. They were just. It was amazing what these women had to go through to gain their freedom. She tries to catch some in her jug for those days left to her, pressing pewter to her ear to hear seizes within her shell. Some of them wanted so desperately to have the opportunities that men had, but the conventional wisdom at the time, women weren't allowed to be attorneys, women weren't allowed to be doctors, women weren't allowed in the professions at all. If you look, and things did not start changing appreciably, and still, I was reading, actually, I introduced a young friend of mine, a young black man, I introduced him to Kill a Mockingbird. I introduced him to the film the other day, and then I started reading about Harper Lee. And when the book published, and when Harper Lee published To Kill a Mockingbird, there was still rampant segregation, because it was in the 60s that the book was published. And it was only through her writings and through her sensitive treatment of segregation that some of these things came to light, and some of them still haven't changed. And it's sad, and it still hasn't changed for a lot of you in the U.S. We think things have changed appreciably, yet why have we not elected a woman leader of this country? Lord knows we've had plenty of women who are more than qualified. But it's our sociology.
Somebody just announced a few weeks ago. So it's coming. It's definitely coming. I remember my father. They both worked for my father, my aunt, and a bunch of other relatives were for New England Telephone in New England. And my aunt, I remember, she had to wear skirts, had to have certain things.
Yep.
My father,
yes,
who was full Italian.
Yep.
And Catholic was, they were, and both of them were basically told, you're a woman, you can't be a certain level. And my father, because he was Italian and Catholic, you're not getting above like director level. Like they just, it was just the thing.
Yeah.
And it's, there was just depression all over the place.
I got told that when I was in the Marine Corps. They said, they said you can't go to the pistol range and watch and fire 45. I said, watch me.
Yep.
And I paid the price because I went bombing through ranks when I was enlisted and made it to staff sergeant in 6 years, which was unheard of. Made it to captain and came to a screeching halt. And I spent 9 years. I spent the remainder of my career as a captain because I pissed off the wrong people because they told me I couldn't do something because I was a woman. And I said, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And because I fought the system, the boys club didn't like me, didn't like it. And so they stood squarely in the way of my getting promoted. So the only advantage of being a captain for 9 years is to be real goddamn good at it.
Although the last six or so years we've gone backwards a little, but we're still going forwards, and we'll keep going. But let's keep going here. So we have, I posted on the board one from, we're going to definitely get to everybody. We should be able to get to everyone that's on the board tonight. So one by Jenny Hunt, which I will give a read here. And this is Remembering Johannes Vermeer and the Girl with the Pearl Earring. Don't trust your eyes. A girl with so many secrets needs a hidden compartment to hide them. Wasting away on the wall of seclusion, trapped in this painting of comatose. Life frozen the day you stopped existing. 1632 brought us you. In 1665, you brought us. Intimate, powerful images, delicately painted masterpieces, now alone and obvious, expecting more friends to hang with. This wish, unfortunately, will never be fulfilled. Just her and a stoic smile, she can't ever change. In her pearl earring, your secrets you stored, attaching your spirit to your works. In our hearts. End poem. Very, very interesting. I really like how you wow, geez, this is fun. So you really brought in the artist, right? And I thought the years are interesting. I wrote for this piece because I didn't think we were going to have enough poems, and now we're barely going to get through a few of them for this contest. But I also noticed there was a date on the one I wrote for, which is, 1600. So I thought that was really interesting where you talk about the year that it was brought and the year that mm-hmm. He brought the paintings, but then also the talking about the subject and how we just, I wish we knew more about her. Right? Like, here's her frozen in time, almost like she's imprisoned in this painting and herself in the painting. And she then, this is all we know about her. So everything else is going to be a secret, right? Because this is obviously back in the time, and everything wasn't filmed, right? So she's lost in history, the subject, except for this one little, this painting that we know of, assuming it's about a real person. So this is very, very beautiful and interesting. And you really put a lot, and I think you did a lot into a few words, Jenny, and I think did a great job with honoring both the artist and the subject. Awesome, awesome job. And let's get to Bobby here. I started a big thing about what everyone's been talking about, women's rights, everything on the charts. So on the chat, I appreciate everybody doing that. And yes, Stelina gave some great comments on this last poem as well too. So thank you, Stelina. But Bobby, go for it. What do you think?
Yeah, it's I've forgotten what I was going to say. That's not important. It does bring forward it is interesting because it's like the Mona Lisa. How much do we really know about her? I mean, with the exception of royalty, who are obviously painted because of their position in history and their role in history. If you look at some other things, you look at the painting of a happy peasant. How much do we know about? And matter of fact, if you want to put my poem up next, I actually speak to that. The anonymity of the subjects in the pictures, because what do we know about her except what we see, and we know nothing else. And it's intriguing. It's vexing. These people had lives, but we know almost nothing about them except what we see. And interestingly enough, the lives and the textiles, because if it weren't for the paintings, we would know very little about what those people wore, because textiles don't last either. So it's interesting how the lives and the appearance and the dress and the mannerisms of these people all are alive. They endure because of these great works of art. But as far as knowing anything about them, unless somebody makes a point, look how much we don't know about Vermeer. Unless we have history on them like we do on Van Gogh, it's lost. It's lost. All we have left is what they left us on canvas.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I'll put the next one up here. I will get to yours if you want us to do yours. We can definitely do it, but I want to get to Naomi's first as well, too, since she's on the board, and then we can do yours next. But it is very interesting. It's an interesting concept where, like, the 1930s and 40s and before then, right, everything is – so much stuff is lost, whereas today, like, everything's recorded. You know, there's just so much of it, and it's very interesting. But
we're inundated with information.
We are very inundated with information. That is very, very much true. And thanks for, the great comments and quotes from Jenny's poem that everybody put up there. So let's do Naomi's. And I don't know if we put Great Asleep or not. Hopefully we didn't, because we've been a long time in between SoundClouds. But
I was going to say, Naomi has a SoundCloud on hers, I believe.
Yep. We do have a SoundCloud there. So if you are there, Gray, if you could put a SoundCloud, that would be great.
He did not hear the mating song of the long-legged herons echoing across the marshlands, did not hear the crystalline sounds carried by the deep flow of the great rivers over the moaning pebbles laying in their depths. He did not smell the musty scent of the ponds mix with the spicy flavor of the watercress, nor hear the dragonfly scurrying flight, the silken whisper of their wings through the long tapering leaves of cattails and bulrushes. All he saw was how the sparkle in her eyes outshined the pearl earring and the softness of her earlobe, how the honeyed coral dew hung to her lips. His shadow stalked dark, deserted rooms until the innocent sweetness of her gaze broke down his dull gray walls like an unexpected surf breaks the massive castle of an old child. And now he drifts on a silvery gull on the sea, and she is in the wave, both cool and sharp as a dagger, fiery and lolly as the wind's song, spreading ethereal hues through his blood.
Thank you, Naomi. I really appreciate that. And my mute button is back, so hopefully I was bugging you guys with it before. But another one for the girl with the pearl earring. And first off, I really liked how she, the artist's intricate details is a lot what's great about him. And in this one, it's a little bit different because and all the other ones, it was a lot of really detailed in the background. This painting is a black background, so it is just the subject that is there. So like she says, he did not hear the matron song of the herons echoing across the marshlands, did not hear the great rivers. He did not, he didn't notice anything else. When he saw this person, there wasn't anything else in the background, right? There was just this person came out. So I think that's a beautiful tribute, the way you said it, Naomi, to the beauty of this woman and how she just outshines everything else. A lot of people, if you ask them, say, what's in the background of the Mona Lisa? I don't know. Is there something there? There is a background. There's a detailed background of some mountains and a river, I think, and all these things, right? But he doesn't see that. He just sees, we're talking about the Mona Lisa earlier. He just sees this person, and the beautiful descriptions that you have, Naomi, are fantastic. So describing kind of from the point of view of the artist and how he just saw her beauty and didn't see that background, I thought was just brilliant. And a fantastic read you gave us as well, too. So thank you so much for that. And Stelina says, beautiful piece, Naomi. Amazing writing the prompt. Such imagery woven within that simple pearl. Truly inspired. Thank you for that, Stelina, for that comment. And my captain, it is all you right now.
My dear friend, the late art curator of the Marine Corps Museum, Jack Dyer, who was himself a combat artist, one of the first in Vietnam, taught me so much about art. And one of the things I learned from him, one of the first things I learned, was when a painter designs a portrait or a painting or a landscape, but there is a method, there's a thought in mind that when they do it, I do this sometimes. I'll just close my eyes before I look at a painting, and then I'll look at it just cold. You have to see where your eyes land first. That is so significant. And on this particular painting, of course, your eyes land first on the earring. That's the first place you go to with your eyes. And that's deliberate. And your focus radiates out from there. To the head gear, to the beauty of her face, and you're right. There's no distractors in the background, unlike the Mona Lisa, which has, I believe, the Italian countryside in her background, like she's standing against a window. Well, in here, there's nothing. There's nothing except she just. There's nothing in this except this girl, and. The power of that and of just her pose, her parted lips, the over-the-shoulder glance, and that earring that you keep coming back to, that you could write stories, you could write odes about the earring and how much is involved. And just she did not smell the musky scent of the ponds or the dragonflies. All you saw was a sparkle in her eyes and the earring. And that is so beautifully said. I mean, the tightness of the focus on this. This is a superbly written piece. I can't say enough nice things about it. Naomi, thank you so much for writing us for our contest.
Absolutely. Very cool. All right, we'll get to yours, and hopefully we get to one or two more after that. So Bobby requests that. Okay. I think it's a good idea. Let's do that. And and Amy says, I love the poem, Naomi. Amazing build-up, emotions conveyed in imagery.
Yeah.
Very true, Amy. All right, so there we go. So yours is up, and of course we're going to have the artist herself read her own poem. So go for it. And
standing on one foot, like a trained bear. I will preface it, and I'm going to write a little note and tuck it into the author's note that I noticed when I was posting these, and even before that, in looking at Vermeer, that. And even because of the documentary, there's always a window, the importance of light. But the window, it just commands so much importance in his work that I listed on the bottom all the prompts that I referenced at the bottom, and it's almost all of them have the window in it. Or if in some cases you see the window, you see the light, but not the window, which is almost the same. So I call it the world's behind the window, the left window. And it's not necessarily one, it's actually there's worlds on both sides of the window. It was neath the left window, always the left window, the one with the southern exposure with its gentle sunlight streaming, slipping through the window, while below, beyond, the soft crunch of passing footfall, unrecognizable, and the sound of distant voices somewhere far away passed by. It was inside, behind that window of clear and colored glass, that his restless wandering was over, that he'd found whatever he thought he'd found or wanted or needed or had sought endlessly, and it had started there where his elusive muse came to rest near the window. On the floors below, he had built a home for his family. But here, above it all, was his true home, here by this window, safe behind the comfort of these four walls and a closed door, because as much as he tried to pretend or imagine himself as part of all of the people out there, he felt here was his sanctuary. The people inhabited the tableaus, changing poses, changing clothes, turning this way and that, lifting a picture, reading a letter, caressing a keyboard as silent music arose from the canvas. The assorted heartbeats came, stayed briefly, and went, their anonymous immortality assured in pigment on canvas. He stored his brushes, colors, palettes, and easels there in the room, collected his belongings and props, his bits and bobs that would adorn his portraits as they filled his life. These fragments of humanity, fabric, bolt, and tapestry, virginal and bench, table and chair, all his companions, his laconic collaborators, ever patient and silent. Yet he was the sole inhabitant of this precious, isolated domain. He alone was the one blowing out the candles at day's end and locking the door every night so no one would trespass. His art's tabernacle and the disturbed the delicate dust that rested among the hallowed particles of temperamental creativity. The sacred secrets could only escape the isolation of his sanctorum as chromo gently, lovingly applied in exquisite detail on fabric, stretched tautly across wooden framing and nailed in place, mute emissary of his incomparable eye for minutia, for his gift of rendering subjects with consummate, meticulous, brilliant detail. Just as there lay a vast world outside that left window, so too there was a sequestered world of beauty and creativity, cherished, protected, hidden from all who could never understand the obsession to capture, immobilize, and render immortal the crude world of men as only his eyes could perceive it from the light of the left window. End poem.
Excellent read, Bobby. And so beautiful. First thing I want to say is, before I comment on the poem, is good night to Naomi and Amy. They're both going to bed. They're tired. So, and it's very early. So if anybody is still on the board, say hi so we know who's there. I don't know if Selena's still on, but we might have. slowly, it's getting very late and people are going to bed. Oh, and Jenny's off to the airport to get her mom. So it's almost 11:45, so they stayed for most of it. So good.
Yeah.
So good night. Good night, Jenny. Good night, Naomi. Good night, Amy. And anyone else who's on, say hi. But great, great board participation tonight. So I really actually enjoyed this a lot. To be honest, I was I was lost in it, Bobby, to be honest. I was I could have just listened to you kind of talk. It was such a just a beautiful description. And while you were reading it, I went back and looked, and I didn't notice this, but there's a lot of windows in his work. And if there aren't windows, there's shine, which looks like from a window.
Light.
It looks like from the sun.
Light
from the sun coming in from a window. So the one I wrote about actually is, we'll read mine next week, is the the geographer, which he's staring out a window, and I wrote a lot about that. So very interesting that he does have that. I'm looking at all the pictures right now that he has that theme. I didn't notice till until you started reading. And that's the part that really struck me, was that description where always the left window, the one with the southern exposure with its gentle sunlight streaming, slipping through the window, while below, beyond, the soft crunch of a passing football, unrecognizable. It was inside, behind that window of clear and colored glass, that his restless wandering was over. I personally relate to a lot of that. And just your poem was just beautifully descriptive, and it really, I think, got into the mind of this character, which is something that we do a lot on the show. And you did a great job with that. I'm always fascinated with windows, and I don't know why people don't look out them enough. I purposely sit by a window, and even though it's the same scene over and over again where I work in my house, work from home, I look out it all the time. It's just like an escape. It's like you can get out the world and kind of see what's happening. Wherever I am, whatever rooms I am, wherever I go, usually one of the first things I do is go look out the window. If I've never been in the room, just to kind of see the view from it. And so I definitely relate to that description there. Where was it here? Yeah, the sacred secrets could only escape the isolation of a sanctum as a chroma gently, lovingly applied, exquisite detail of fabric. So yeah, just again talking about then all of the what he's doing in his it's almost like looking out the window. This is what I got, at least, Bobby. You can tell me what you meant, but looking out the window and you get inspired and you see the world, and then you come and put that on the canvas, right? You come in and then express that inside. So he's living through that window and then expressing everything on the works, which I thought was just great. So beautiful. Yeah, and you use basically every single prompt you put down there.
Just about.
Which is great.
That was struck me.
Yeah, so yes, Stelina is on the board. She said, yes, the windows are most significant. She gave you a big, oh, I'm here. Yep, she's still here. She gave you a big, right here, there's so much to admire in this piece. It needs more than just one read. You have really delved into this painting to give it the detail it deserves. And then she said, yeah, I love looking out windows, especially on the train. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So great job, and thanks for sticking with us, Stelina.
Thank you. I just, it seemed to me you got the world outside and his world inside the gentle divide was the window that let the light in, but kept everything else out.
Absolutely. All right, so we're just going to go in order here. So I don't think we have any more SoundClouds that we'll do tonight. Okay. We do have a couple more to do, but let's see if we can. What time is it? One. All right, we'll definitely do one more. We'll see if we can do two, but we don't like to rush them. I like the good life. Give the poems the comments they deserve. So I like the nice long conversations about them. We're good with carryovers, right, Bobby? We always have.
Oh yeah.
We had so many carryovers once. We did all carryovers, and we had to carry over a whole show once, which is fine. I'm okay with that.
Well, you know, that's what we can do for our anniversary.
Oh, there you go. That's true. Yep, we do have an anniversary coming up. Yep, happy anniversary.
Yep.
All right, where are we? All right, so you just read that one, so I will read this one by, let me put it up on my screen here, by Sandy G. Again, we'll see how many we can get through. And speaking of light, this is by Sandy G, called Mastering Light and Shadow. Draw a line with a pencil. Chalk a circle on a blackboard. Squeeze bright colors on a palette. Magnificent visions might appear. A milkmaid pouring milk, perhaps. Bring your sketchbook, set your easel. Excuse me. Be generous with alizarin crimson. Fry pastels, chalk, charcoal. Sketch a lady tating lace. Ask your muse to set the table. Sketch storming seas and busy bees. Woodland fawns, nuzzling flowers. Barn owls, hooting from the shadows. a girl with earrings made of pearl, another beneath a hat of scarlet. Share life's light in black and white, children's grins and old man's chins, ermine hats on happy vassals, young woman clutching hand on hand. Study nature, sun, and shadow, view any work of Jean Vermeer. End poem, excellent write. And she used multiple prompts, which is really a theme. I think one of the things that happened here with your contest, Bobby, is people were really inspired by the whole thing, which a lot of times they are, but this one seemed more than the other ones. And there really is a lot of common themes. And this person got into the light too, which is the mastering light and shadow. But I really like that he, that she is talking again about the artist and just, go for it, get those visions, express yourself, and here's what you do. And then she went on to describe all the different or multiple different prompts on just, whatever you see, give us that light, give us that, line with pencil, chalk a circle on blackboard, do whatever you can to master that light and shadow and give us that vision that you're saying. So I thought it was a very interesting tribute to the different paintings, but then to the passion of the artist himself. So, yeah, that was great. Great way that she kind of tied everything in there. Nice job, Sandy G. And, Bobby, go for it. Uh-oh, Bobby is mutating. Hopefully she stays Bobby.
I said I agreed completely, and it was a great observation, and I don't think there's anything I'm going to add, so let's see if we can get through another poem.
Okay, great. First, everybody note their calendars. Bobby agreed with me completely. I don't know if that's ever happened before. Let's make sure that's noted in our notebooks there. So someone actually agreed with everything I said.
You can die happy.
Yeah, I absolutely, yes. I feel
don't tell your wife.
I feel justified.
I don't want to set a dangerous precedent.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Don't get my ego going here. You don't want to bring me back down to reality. All right, we got this one here we can do, and this should take us in there. And one last one we should be able to get to. So you can read this one. It is by Coming Into Myself, which I don't know if we've ever read her on this show before.
Who's that?
And I'm going to paste it right here. And before we do, Stelina said, beautiful tribute to an amazing artist. The use of deft imagery and expressive lines breathes life into his artwork. So, yes, I agree with that, Stelina, definitely. All right, let's see if we can get this one in.
Yeah, the title, the nom de plume looks familiar to me. So I think we may have had her before, but I certainly have encountered her before. And we have a bright, I don't know if you call that pink or purple, but it's painful. Interruption. Like the beach sand in my fingers, the light sifts slowly through the several window panes, illuminating my music the way a full moon alights on snow. The well-polished wood on the chair back glows. My favorite red blouse warms me just enough in the cool, dark, deft room. Out of the gloaming, a great dark painting watches over me. Deep into my music, my pen dances across the page, scribbling those difficult passages, and my suitor interrupts. Gently, he is taking my music, calling me out of my virginal cloud. My frustration plays across my face. I turn away quickly to avoid my emotions being seen. Looking out of the frame at you, I ask if you have ever been interrupted at a frustrating time. Perhaps you were writing, trying to hold on to an ephemeral thought. Perhaps you were contemplating this painting, trying to reach through the centuries to the elusive Mr. Vermeer. Or perhaps, like me, you were engulfed in your music, riding high on clouds of arpeggios. I must go. My suitor is insistent, his gray cape threatening to overwhelm me in its fabric fog. End poem.
Thank thank you. Great reading. Oh, excuse me. All right, I'll give my 1 minute comment on this. And as a musician myself, and, you know, we're all poets here, right? It can get frustrating when you're really into that thought. I'm reminded of Mozart. I'm sure everyone's probably seen the Amadeus movie, and there's a couple of scenes where he does get frustrated. People are interrupting him. And it can, it's not even people that happen sometimes. I'll be walking down the street and thinking of poetry, and then something happens. Somebody walks by or a car goes by and distracts me, and you're like, I lost that thought, right? I'll be jamming, I'll be playing drums, and something interrupts me, and I go back and go, what was that beat I was just playing? Like, you lose it. And so it can be frustrating, and I thought she did a great job with getting a passion into that. So talking about the interruption and taking almost the musical passion of it and making it into a passionate, not necessarily rant, but a passionate poem about the interruption itself. So great job coming. I enjoyed that one a lot. Bobby, you have two jobs. You have 1 minute to comment and 1 minute to take us out. So go for it.
Okay, the 1 minute to comment. I liked it. So moving right along. But girlfriend, you got to change that background color on your page. That hurts. I don't know whether you call that lavender or pink or but I don't know, but it hurts. If you want me to read more of your poetry, you got to get away from that color. It's awful. But that's just a personal comment. That's just me. Okay. We got through Vermeer. I was a little concerned because I was running a little late this week, and we had one entry for a little while, and fortunately our troops bailed us out. We ended up with some great entries, and I actually surprised myself with the one I wrote, which I was really happy with. So for our next program, we have
we're going to have all the extra ones we will have. So we'll play everybody that didn't get. We'll go through them.
Yes, we will. And you have to tell me whether you want to do an anniversary program or not. So if we're going to do an anniversary program, we got to think about that. But in the meantime, I'm going to put out there probably tomorrow, since I was building it today, is I found this marvelous, marvelous Turkish photographer, interpretive photographer, Svetlana Melik Nubarova. And her stuff is just amazing. It looks like portraits, but it's photographs. It's using the modern technology. It's beautiful stuff. I cannot wait to put it out there. My big dilemma was picking out which ones I was going to put out there, because she had a whole shit ton. And I that is, by the way, an official unit of measure. She had a whole shit ton of stuff out there, and I was going through trying to pick out the ones that I thought would be most inspirational and provocative. But she is just amazing, an amazing artist, and I cannot wait to post this because I think it's very exciting. And we haven't had a photographer in a while, so I thought I would, since Vermeer is so close to photography, I thought we would transition into a photograph, and it's time for a lady artist anyway. So there we are, and we're done. You remember Dick Tracy? You remember Dick Tracy?
Yes.
Well, okay. Well, there was one character in Dick Tracy called Vera Aldit, and they asked him why he had a movie like, he had a name like that, because when they had their last kid, they had their last child, he says Vera Aldit. So Vera Aldit.
Yep.
I didn't make it up. I just read it. No, that's my idea. I'm much funnier than that.
It's okay.
So,
good night, everybody. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you. And we try. We're trying very hard not to make it quite as exciting. So anyway, but thanks everyone for participating. Thank you, Dan, for your usual stellar job. And same bat time, same bat channel in 2 weeks.
Absolutely. All right. Good night, Bobby. Good night, everyone.
Ciao. Ciao a tutti.